they thought we were going to be the forgotten, the has-beens, the ones who will do whatever they want, no matter how much we lost of ourselves. They try to overlook us, discard us, and put us in a box. They say we are done for. But what they don't know is that we are now getting started. Like a phoenix, we have emerged with inner grace, beauty, and strength. We are wise, we are bold, we are brave, we are focused, we are committed, we are alive.
We're 50 and we're not dead yet.
We're 50 and we're not dead yet.
We are 50 and we're not dead yet.
Welcome to 50 Not Dead. I'm your host, Cameron Huban. Today, it is my immense pleasure to welcome Shirley Justice to our show. Shirley is president and COO at Virtual Supply. She has been in the consumer products industry for over 25 years. She started in logistics in college, and it was a springboard for a successful career in the sporting goods industry, and she's come full circle to product distribution. In this lifestyle, she has had the opportunity to live in LA, San Francisco, Singapore, Ho Chi Minh City, Hong Kong, and Portland. Shirley, it is a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor and a privilege to talk with another colleague and somebody that's got a similar background. That's for sure. There's so much to talk about.
Absolutely. I feel the same. I'm like, oh, yeah, she lived in Ho Chi Minh, too. And oh, my God, I love that city. And yeah, and that supply chain footwear background runs deep. And the common people that we probably know, I'm assuming, are endless. It's a small
Absolutely.
World.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my goodness. So before we get into the kind of nuts and bolts of 50 Not Dead, Shirley, will you share just a little bit more about who you are as a person, maybe where you grew up, and kind of, you know, who made Shirley? What makes Shirley who she is?
Absolutely. I'm a native of Portland, Oregon. Very proud of that. So I grew up with Nike in my backyard, was an athlete. Grew up in a very tight-knit family and community, and both my parents were deaf, so I grew up so I can sign. Grew up being an advocate and a voice for them throughout my young life, which really kind of set me up for, I think, looking at the world a little bit differently. I sometimes take that for granted. But here I am, and I would be remiss if I didn't say that upbringing was the foundation for everything that I do today.
I think that is an absolute gem of a way to start off a conversation, because it's so often that we don't actually think about the kind of the fabric that makes us who we are. And when you were describing to me earlier about this learning to be an advocate at a young age and really feeling that deeply. And the word you also used was that it brought out leadership in you at a very young age. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. I think it really comes down to, again, that advocacy. It's hard to be an advocate without somehow being a leader. And it's hard to be a leader without also being an advocate. Hmm. And I think in growing up with deaf parents, where I would see injustices happening, or I would see somebody cut the line in front of my parents because they felt like they couldn't respond, or somebody would dumb down a conversation because they thought that my parents wouldn't understand, or even people talking behind their backs where I was in earshot, right? And just saying, hey, that's not okay.
Yeah. Did you say that? Were you able to?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I learned to use my voice early. And I think all of that moves you towards just a natural leadership role. And I will say, you know, being an athlete too, I mean, I was generally kind of at the forefront, right? Leading the team, team captain, bringing everybody along, influencing my peers and those around me. And again, I think that just all builds you into a place where you have a natural, or at least I did. I feel like I built a natural resiliency around being that advocate, but also being a leader for people who can't always champion for themselves. But also when you think about organizationally, right, mm-hmm. that it kind of transcends into all places in our lives, I think, when you grow up with.
I would imagine too, and I could be wrong, but just from what you're describing, well, two things come to mind. One, I think it is just amazing that you were so brave to use your voice at a young age, because there are a lot of us, so many women our age, that are still really stuck on that part. Trying to find it and not be afraid of it, and to really use it loudly, use it in a way that has impact, not being afraid of, you know, somebody turning around and say, well, who are you to say that? And to embrace that at a young age, that is, I mean, shows a real strength of character. And I'm also hearing an incredible amount of empathy that comes from, you know, like, again, recognizing at a young age, you know, when somebody cuts in front and like, that's not okay. And being able to see that, you know, to be an advocate, right? I think that there is an empathy there that truly understands, or does their best to understand, where the other person that you're advocating is coming from, so that you can do a good job of it. And when I said that, you were like, does that land funny? Or does that land like, yeah, sure.
No, I think that's true. I mean, I also would say I had my grandparents were close to us, and my grandmother was very much in my corner at all times. Mm-hmm. Right? Surely she was encouraging me, hey, speak up. If something doesn't seem right, it probably isn't. Mm-hmm. Speak up. So with that sort of gentle encouragement and empathy with her, I saw that all the time. And so the influence that my grandparents had on my parents as well as us as kids is also pretty significant. So I always felt safe. I don't know how to describe it any other way, but I always felt safe to do that. And I wasn't, but I certainly felt like I was.
But that's, I think that is the key, right? I mean, we talk now a lot about in organizations building psychological safety. And if Absolutely. You had that, whether there was, you know, whether you had true safety or not, it looks like you did okay.
I absolutely did okay. Yes.
So that, I mean, that is really, what a cool thing to take away from the reflection back on your childhood. I think that is, again, just a source of strength and character and charisma that it sounds like you grasped and, like, I don't know, held close and like ran with really early. So with that, you know, if we now push fast forward, and we look at you today in a position of leadership in a company, and having been in many positions of leadership, when I asked you about a podcast called 50 Not Dead, how did that land with you? What did you think?
The first thing I thought was, am I 50? Am I 50? And holy smokes, I'm 50. I'm over 50. I think that was the first thing that occurred to me, like, wow, I'm there. Because when I was younger, and I've been in leadership for a long time, and I remember the days where I was in my mid, late 20s, and I didn't want anybody to ask me my age because I felt I was too young, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. there is that cachet that goes with it, right? Oh, well, she doesn't have enough experience if she's only 20-something, right?
Yeah.
So I was always striving to look, sound, be that older person that had those years of experience to gain credibility. Mm-hmm. And then here we are, fast forward. I'm like, oh my God, I'm there and wish I could take some of the years off. Does this work backward? It doesn't so much. But at the same time, I think all of those years does move you to a place to say, you know what? there's been some really great learnings along the way. And some of them do come around how old we are, right? Mm-hmm. As we move throughout our careers, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think being a woman who is not tall, I also went through that period of time of questioning, will I ever be taken seriously? You know, would I be taken seriously as a small person, a petite person? Would I be seen as too young to do the jobs that I was doing? And right. And I mean, I never got taller, but thank God, I guess I earned my stripes some other way. And I mean, maybe it's through the wrinkles and the gray hairs, but, you know, but there is something, I think, you know, that only experience and longevity bring us, you know, that we get along the way.
Well, they certainly say, right, it's wisdom that comes with the journey. And certainly, I think we all feel that, right, as we get older. If we're paying attention, we all feel that as we get older, mm-hmm. right? The little things don't bother us quite as much anymore because we're able to kind of finesse through that and get to the heart of what needs to be dealt with or worked through, right? And that's a gift. I wish I had that when I was in my 20s.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But when you're in that period of time, I don't know about you, but I know that in my 20s, certainly a lot of concern about what others thought. And if I was doing Absolutely. It right, and if I would ever be right or ever be, mm-hmm. you know, enough. And some of that, I mean, has taken a really freaking long time to claw my way through, earn my way. I don't know, find my way through, mm-hmm. you know, that it takes that time and the continued growth to be able to put some of that in perspective and just be like, well, you know, no, it doesn't necessarily matter at all what somebody else thinks about it, right? If it's right for me, as long as I'm not hurting anyone.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. You know, when I when we were prepping for our call, I recognized that there was something that you had said about what are your challenges, and you had answered to be my best self every day. Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, what it means to be your best self at this point in your life versus maybe a different point in your life? Or has that been consistent?
I'd like to say it's been consistent, but I don't think it has been. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that I've come to realize probably only in the last 5-7 years. And I think when we're put in a position where you do lead a lot of people or a company, it becomes really apparent, like what you're responsible for, right? Because it's not just my life I'm thinking about, it's everybody else that I work with. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as I was younger in those leadership positions, that wasn't, I was always concerned for my team and I was always advocating for my team. But I think it's different when it's a broader scale. Mm-hmm. And so being put into that scenario, it's really important, at least for me, to be always thinking about how do I show up with my best self every day so that other people in turn can feel that too. And yeah, we all have bad days. And there are times that I'll say, today is not a great day, right? I'll put that warning out there. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm always trying to wake up every day, like, how can I be my best self today? Because I want to make sure that we're all doing that and all working towards the same goals as a company and organization, but also personally. I think that's important too. I talk a lot about, there's a number of E's that I talk about with the team. I talk about how do we enable, how do we empower people? How do we embrace change? How do we evolve? How do we elevate? But also if you come back before you even enable, how do you engage? How do you empathize? How do you energize people? And so I talk about that a lot. I talk about the speed of play. And sometimes when you're in throes of how fast you're moving, you sometimes miss some things. Mm-hmm. And is it okay to come back and say, hey, I made an error, or yes, we screwed this up. Looking at that with empathy and going, okay, I know we pushed too fast. Let's take it back. Let's move forward again. I think is so important for people because in today's environment, you got to fail. We're not learning if we're not feeling, but it has to be the right environment for that. And I think that's really key. And that's why I talk so much about these E's with the group, because it does make a difference in how people see you and how people approach you. And you want to be approachable. I mean, that's the other thing, too. I worked with people that weren't approachable, didn't go well. I worked with people that were fantastically, like, always available to everybody, but then they couldn't do the stuff that they were supposed to be doing for their jobs. And that can be challenging.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a fine balance there. But I think if you don't recognize it, it makes it harder for you and for everybody else that you work with.
Yeah, I like something that you said when you were first answering this question, just the change in scope of the understanding almost of the same responsibility, but how you were talking about, it's like you always cared about your team, but that now it was like the responsibility of caring for a team, and almost like it sounded to me like a different understanding of, like, it's not just these people here, it's their families, their circle as well. And I think that comes it with maturity. And I also like what you just said about we have to fail in today's environment. I mean, and the fact that you're able to say that as a leader and have these anchors of, like, yeah, use all these E's, engage, enable, embrace, elevate, empathize, that you can come back to those, to me, sounds like a place, an environment of psychological safety of, like, yeah, we're going to fail because we're meant to be really fast. You're in logistics. I'm guessing it is, yep. You know, it needs to be fully delivered, you know, on time, you know, of best quality. I mean, that doesn't go away, but the landscape in which the delivery and the expectation of the speed in today's time, oh my God, has just gone. It's like you order something and you expect it. And sometimes it's in your hand in hours. It's like, were they waiting outside? Like, how did this happen? You know, and
right.
And how could
right.
somebody sometimes screw up? And what a blessing to have a leader like you that recognizes that. It's like, yeah, we're going to sometimes. I am not hearing at all that you're like, yeah, we just fail all the time. That's not what I hear at all. It's more of like that recognition.
I'm glad you heard that.
Yeah, I mean, but just the recognition that we're pushing hard. And that sometimes mistakes will be made because we're pushing hard to be the best. And in a vastly, very quickly changing environment that the whole world is trying to keep up with and to evolve at the same time.
For sure. I mean, when I started in logistics more than a few decades ago, you had time, right? You could do a lot of planning to move goods around the world. Today, like you said, it's in hours. It is so different than that world. And I think that's why I came full circle, because it got kind of interesting again. Right? People do have high expectations. People expect things yesterday. How do you move in that environment without killing everybody? Right?
Like, without what?
Killing everybody.
Yes.
Right? Because, because there's a certain pace that you can keep. And this comes back to, you know, the all of the service. I mean, I also grew up sort of in this, I'll say, in this idea of service. And when you work for a product company or you work for a service company, it's very different, right? And I think because I started in service, that helped me better understand product and then coming back into service as well. That sort of that mentality of, I'm here to serve. We're here to serve. Let's make sure we can go as fast as we can go without dropping the ball. But at the same time, also understanding how the world has changed.
Yeah.
Right. Automation, really investing in your systems and your processes and your structure so that people can go fast without killing themselves.
Yes. Right?
Having a lot of those things in place that help us understand how the business is moving and how to course correct as you're doing it. Versus, right, you get to the end and, oh my gosh, now it's catastrophic.
Right.
Rather than understanding, oh, we just misstepped. We can correct it pretty quickly. That's the difference of, like, I see over the years. And again, this kind of comes back to being in, I think, a more mature person in the organization. The younger generations are expecting us to be able to flex and to hear and to understand what is changing the game out there. And there are some things that are trends, right, that'll come through. I'm sure you've heard there's this big thing called the metaverse. A lot of companies investing in this space, but it's not taken, it's not the momentum that I think everybody thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of sort of pulling back, and even for us, where we distribute products sort of in this connected home space, understanding the gaming environment, understanding where people are going to is really important for us to be on top of as well. And as somebody that's a bit older that was never really a gamer, I'm having to listen a lot, right? Mm. That's also really important. You want to be approachable. I want to listen. I want to understand where we should be making better investments as we go forward.
The awareness of listening, I think, is critical. And in your industry, are there a lot of senior positions that are filled by women?
Half of them are filled by women.
Half of them are filled by men? Half of them?
Women.
By women. So 50-50. Okay.
Yes.
That's good, I think.
It is good. It is good.
Yeah. And how about women in their 50s? Do you feel like when you were saying, you know, that you need to listen, like, it, and goodness, I would too. I wasn't ever a gamer. And if I was responsible for building systems or building something that meant to serve that area, I would need to learn. And do you find that there is, do you feel that there is any gendered ageism going on? Do you feel that they're open to have you listen, and are they open to have you speak to them when you feel like, okay, well, okay, now that I understand what you're, what this is that you're talking about, strategically, we still need to do this and this, or I want to support your team in doing that. Or is there any friction?
I wouldn't say there's any friction. I mean, I'll say there's two women that we're both in our 50s. The men that are in their 50s, that's only a few of them too. Okay. So we're fairly balanced that way. And I've never felt that there's been a, well, we know better kind of thing. So I don't feel like there's that gendered ageism happening. I worry more about it, honestly, with, again, the younger generations being relevant. I mean, we need to be relevant, right? Mm-hmm. Or they're not going to learn anything, or they're going to think they have nothing to learn from us. And when that happens, for me, I'm like, danger, right? Because then they're not going to understand or follow the targets that you set for them.
Okay. Right? Really good point. And how do you then engage and stay current on all of the things that you must need to stay current with?
It's a lot of reading. It's a lot of reading, but again, it comes back to the listening. I mean, I meet with everyone in my direct reports on a daily basis for the most part, and it's not to micromanage. It's to stay up to speed on what's going on. I meet with that next level, you know, every week. The next level after that, I meet every 2 weeks. You know, it goes all the way down to, I might have a monthly meeting with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But that helps me understand where they are. And how can I meet them there and or bring them along, right?
Yeah.
That's just always been, I think, a part of my DNA is if you're not having those conversations, and yes, they take time. I will say at one point, actually not multiple points throughout my career, do you feel like you spend too much time, you know, in one-on-one meetings or in coaching and mentoring? And my answer every single time is no.
Mm.
That's meaningful for that individual. And frankly, I learned something also. Mm-hmm. It's always important for us, because if you're a person that loves to learn and then do something with that, if it's appropriate, that's where I want to be. And that's where I want people in the organization to be, right? People don't just become innovators or creative overnight, right? Mm-hmm. They're learning, they're doing their trade. They're asking questions, important, really good questions, pushing the boundaries. And you want to be able to encourage that. Again, in a safe environment, right? And sometimes we're going to take a risk and it's going to fail, right? We're going to sign up the wrong vendor, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. We course correct and we divest and we invest somewhere else, right? We just keep going. And I think that's really important for people to learn. And again, in the generations, the younger people just coming out of school or university into the work environment, it's definitely different. Values are a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding is way different. And so just the work ethic, I think, getting people to understand what we mean when we say, hey, we have a banding system. This is what you need to do to get here. It's not just checking boxes, right? There's a soft and a hard skills to everything that we learn. That's challenging too, again, if they don't see me as relevant.
Right.
So as a leadership team, and thankfully, we also have some younger people on the team, right, in leadership positions. So we all balance each other out, and we're all ready to push us forward where we need to.
Yeah, I like a lot what you were saying about the meetings all the way, you know, up and down, basically, and that, you know, I know what comes through for me is really being able to doing it as a way of keeping your finger on the pulse of like really like okay, like what is going on in the industry, but also just for this person, because even that, right, will tell you a lot about, okay, well, like you just mentioned, oh, well, this person might be frustrated by a certain thing or a certain expectation that is different than the expectation that you had set. But if you didn't engage with them, they might write you off or you might write them off, right? I mean, not understanding of just being like, well, oh, it's, yeah, you know what? When I talk with everybody at this age, they seem to have the same kind of frustration around, I don't know what, whatever, I'm making this up, right? And so it's like, oh, okay, well, then maybe either we need to have some conversations around that together. Like, okay, well, what do we want to hold as a common value for the company that we're in or a common value for our group of, you know, what it means to be service excellence, for example, or what it's going to take to grow, and how is that demonstrated, and just to calibrate. But I like the idea of just having the conversations. And the, you know, one of the things that I talk about frequently is that 92% of companies in the U.S. do not include ageism in their DEI initiatives. Only 8% do, but we, and 10,000 people a day turn 50 in North America. And so it's like the companies, I think, that are able to embrace what you were just describing in this one little microcosm, right? Of, okay, we all have something to learn from each other, and we all need to contribute, because otherwise I can't lead if they see me as irrelevant. And they're not going to take direction if they see me as irrelevant. And they're not going to perform the best if they don't understand what performance means to you, who is the one that is responsible potentially for their paycheck or their career progression. And right. I think that companies that embrace that on large scale, you know, that embrace the fact that multi-generational, what do I say, workforces are important to keep a company vibrant, are going to be, it's a way of being cutting edge. Like if you can get there faster than somebody else in terms of like, yep, you know what, we're taking people straight out of college. We're taking people that have retired that want to come back. We're really mixing it up because we recognize that people at every level and every age stage add value, and it's different and complementary. I think that there is opportunity, and it feels like what you're telling me is that it's embraced where you are. And granted, I'm guessing that it's, you know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows every day, but for the most part, would you say, I mean, you said that it is. Yeah. I mean, is that feel authentic?
For the most part it is. Yeah. I mean, we strive to be the best place to work. You know, we do that with, Portland Business Journal, with Oregon Best 100. We do that with Inc. 5000. Like we do a number of these surveys in large part to get that feedback, right? To understand, okay, now how can we pivot? Do we need to adapt? Do we need to pivot? Do we need to introduce something new? For example, we have a number of committees, and we had some senior leaders and some managers in those committees. And what I heard loud and clear was, let us manage this. We wanted them all to be employee-led. And of course, when we talk about budgets, that needs to go up to somebody. But we want to take ownership for that. We don't need, because as soon as the senior person says, oh, we should do this, everybody kind of gets quiet and follows, rather than having a real conversation about what we might need to be doing, right? Simple things like that are really important for us, because we're striving to be that place that everybody wants to work for.
Cool.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty fun. I mean, we obviously misstep from time to time. And like I say, we quickly kind of come back, get to the root cause of it. Okay. We learn from it. Let's adjust or adapt where we need to. And I hope and I see that people really appreciate that about the leadership team here, is that we do that. We are authentic through and through. And again, and there might be a reason that we can't do something. And we'll talk about that too, right?
They need to understand, which is nice. Actually, frankly, when something can't be done, I think talking about it is the best thing. When everybody goes silent is when everybody freaks out and so much productivity is lost, because then everybody is speculating like, oh, well, something is happening. Something's coming up, no promotions this year or no bonus this year. The shit's hitting the fan. You know, it's just like, you know, and it might be like, well, actually if it was communicated, actually maybe it's something has been tough and we're recalibrating. This will come to you. We are going to be, we're working through it. We might have to approach it in a different way, but just know that we are working through it and we will communicate, you know, as quickly as we can and hold yourself to a date or something. I think that, again, when leadership clams up is when this major freak out happens.
Danger, danger. And I think as leaders, oftentimes we get into a situation, particularly when you're a public company, you know, you need to disclose more. As a private company, we don't have to disclose as much. Mm. And you always want to make sure that people understand what you're sharing as well. But I'll say this, I mean, all of us through COVID had challenges communicating throughout our organizations and letting them know that we had them in mind and keeping them safe was a challenge too. And the business kind of came off of its high point for a little while there, right? Hey, we've got you. We know what's happening. We're going to be taking these steps to make sure that we address them. Hold tight. We will all get to the other side of this. And I think that's also a positivity thing, right? As leaders, we all have to be positive, even in the darkest of times, just to move, try to get everybody moving through, but as honest and as honest as possible. Right. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you don't want to tell them the roof's falling in. It was never falling in. But you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, right. You don't want to create complete chaos and panic.
Exactly.
And I think that there's a really nice balance that can probably be met of like enough information to keep people, to let people know that, okay, information is coming and we're working through this.
Exactly.
But we're struggling. We're also trying to figure out, make our Zoom rooms work. I mean, this, everybody knows how to do it now, but like at the beginning of 2020,
right.
You know, how do we get all 80 of you participating in a way that's going to be meaningful? And okay, or what is the etiquette on Slack? And when you've got, your phone keeps dinging and pinging and then you've got, IMs going on. It's just like, oh my God, it's for some, a real new world. For some companies, like, well, we were already on Slack and it was already like this. It wasn't so different. It's just that now we're at home instead of at the office. And thankfully we've made it through the part of like the real unknown of what that was. So I would like to ask you, Shirley, when you think of your own career and you look out in what you still want to do, one of the things you've said that you haven't yet done, you've worked for big, big companies. You worked for private companies. You worked for public companies. You've worked for smaller companies. You've worked for manufacturers. You've worked for brands. You've done a lot of the gamut, but you haven't run your own company yet. Is that something that you think about?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I have thought about it probably more in the last, I'll say 5-7 years, more than prior to that. I mean, here's the thing. I'm kind of in the best of both worlds. Today, I don't have majority share of the company, right? I don't have all the ownership of the company, but I manage the company. Mm-hmm. And I can make that level of contribution as if I do own the company without all the risks that goes along with actually owning the company, right? So it's kind of the best of both worlds. But I also had to come in and learn the culture. And thankfully, we shared a lot of the same values. So it was easy to come in and understand that and build upon that. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought about, God, if I had my own company, you know, I could set this culture and we'd all be growing and going crazy, right? And all, it would be so fun. And now I think, gosh, now that I'm in my 50s, do I have the energy and stamina to do that and feel like I'm starting over again? And I think mm-hmm. the short answer is no. But there's a lot of franchises out there. And sometimes I listen to what people are doing in that space and is there a fit? But I think at the end of the day, I really love what I'm doing and feel like I am able to do that mm-hmm. and without the level of risk that comes with actually owning the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's when you have, I think we all, and maybe not all, but I think that a lot of people that have been in leadership positions, right? I mean, one of the greatest values or greatest feelings there is being able to make an impact. I think most people, you know, they want to do a good job. And they want their work to be meaningful in some way, shape, or form, right? Even if it is just being recognized for doing a good job at whatever it is that they're doing, right? Most people, I think, want to do a good job. I think if we come from a place of positive intent, most people want to do a good job and most people want to have an impact. And if you're able to have that impact without the risk of feeling like total responsibility is on your shoulders, I can see why that would be like a pretty sweet deal in terms of being able to have great impact, being able to set direction, being able to be really strategic. And it sounds like have a great deal of influence and integration into how the culture is fostered. And I,
yes.
And that sounds, I mean, I can certainly appreciate that. I spoke with a friend who you might know, but in case you don't, I won't disclose the name right now because that would just maybe be silly. But he owns his own company, and he was talking to me recently about, you know, there have been times where, especially in today's economy, where, you know, he feels it so incredibly personally about, you know, when they're struggling, when things are a little thinner than is comfortable. And like, you know, and he knows that like he's the buck stops with him. He is the end all be all. And if somebody can't feed their family or send their kids to school, he feels that great responsibility. I can't imagine that being the president and CEO of a company is that much. I mean, I would think that there's probably shades
it's
of difference
close.
In that. I was going to say, it sounds like it's actually awfully darn close. I think that maybe it's more the risk element that is different, but yeah, it sounds like you take it very seriously.
It's more of the risk because you're talking, you know, multi-million dollars in terms of investment of buying a company, right?
Yeah.
That's the risk aspect I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The rest of it, I feel all of it. Anytime, you know, we're talking about headcount, whether it's adding or through attrition, like all of those things, feeling the impact that we have on the people and on our people and their families is absolutely felt every day.
Yeah. I mean, those must make for some rough nights in certain times and lots of joy in others.
Oh, for sure. Thankfully more joy.
Good. Thank God. Yeah.
Thankfully more joy. Yeah. But certainly, like I say, like COVID, I think did a number for a lot of people and just being able to be strong through that, but also act with empathy was really important.
Sounds like you do a really good job of being human for your workforce.
Well, yeah, that's it, isn't it? It's that simple word, yet not so simple to talk about, but absolutely, you're right. It's just about, hey, it's okay. We're all human.
I think that when a leader can admit that, like I'm human too, and I, you know, I didn't sleep last night because I'm really worried about this, or I, you know, I stayed up and I was running numbers or, you know, doing backflips trying to figure out how to make these certain things work. I think it's, you know, nice for employees to know like how much you care and that you really are doing that. And it sounds like you do a really good job of sharing that.
Thank you. I try. Oh, yeah. That's part of the like trying to be our best every day, right? Showing up to be our best selves.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And You're welcome. I mean, it sounds like a really cool place to work. And again, I like, you know, if I bring it back to 50 Not Dead, I like the fact that there is this integrated approach with age. And is there anything that you feel like we've left uncovered or that you would want somebody who's in their 50s to hear?
I guess the one thing I would say, at the risk of maybe a little bit of a repeat, is being open, being flexible, listening to what people are saying. Like, try, it's so, I think often as all of us move along our journeys, it's easy to think about your box and only your box. And many of us are routine based, right? There's safety in having a routine.
Yes.
Right. And breaking out of that routine is sometimes a challenge. And I think when you're in your 50s, you have to think about those situations where you can't close the box, right? You have to figure out, how do you remain flexible, approachable, open to learning? I think probably the bottom line is be open to learning, because when you can show that, that's when people will engage. Mm-hmm. If you can't do that, if you're closed, it's going to be really hard to be welcomed back, right? Have that opportunity to go work for a company in your 50s because you've got all this amazing experience. But if you're not open or listening or flexible or can adapt to what's happening in today's environment, it's going to be really challenging for you.
Do you get many people applying for roles in your company that are 50 plus? I mean, maybe you don't know, because I think it's probably illegal to ask.
In the time that I've been here, I'm in 4.5 years, only a couple,
really?
Most of them. But I would say from a management perspective, we're anywhere from, you know, late 20s up through even 60. Uh-huh. So it's a pretty broad gamut. But I wouldn't say we've got, yeah, there's not a whole lot of people applying that are 50 plus. That's for sure.
Interesting. My guess is that you're going to see an uptick in the next 5 years because of
a part of me that says, I hope you're right.
Mm. Oh, well, that's good. I mean, I'm glad that there's an openness to that, because I think that from the fact that the generation coming behind us, that is coming up next, is mm-hmm. smaller than ours. And so, and if
right.
I think that people in their 50s too, well, even if you've been knocked out of your job, or if you thought, oh, I wanted, you know, I hit 55 or I hit even 65, I'm not sure. It's like, if you're not getting people in their 50s, you're probably not going to jump to, you know, 68-year-olds applying every day. But I think that there's a lot of people that are, you know, that maybe lost their jobs, or maybe said, okay, for example, if any of us that have been in manufacturing, had we done a 25-year stint overseas and we were smart with our investments, we would not necessarily have to work per se past 55, right? Depending on how we spend our money and what we maybe we did a whole bunch of other stuff, but there is the potential that some people might say, okay, I'm done. I've done this. I've worked a bajillion hours for a bajillion years, and I'm going to go play golf, or I'm going to go retire in Palm Springs or whatever. And then I think it's like, oh, okay, well, wow, okay, now I'm 56, and I still have, my brain's still working. I still have more to give. I'm not done growing, learning, mentoring, doing.
Contributing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that we're going to see a shift. And I think that the companies that embrace that, I think, are going to be the ones that ultimately succeed, because then they'll have this really nice mix. I mean, just based on the reading that I've been doing and the research that I've seen, I think that if companies are open to that, they're going to have a really nice, rich environment. To your point, though, the person that is interviewing does have a responsibility on their side too, to remain open, to remain flexible, to understand what today's work environment is like and what is needed, so that they are seen as approachable. It's like, oh, okay. So people out there, you know, listen to what Shirley said. You know, make sure you're keeping your minds open. I think that that is such an important message, because I think that when we think of employees that might be considered as done, or they've mailed it in, maybe they're seen as super resistant to change, or they're not open to learn. Maybe it just needs a different conversation of, do you need some help? You know, are you interested in staying on? And if you are, like, how can we, let's have some conversation. Like? Yeah. What does that look like for you? And what would you like it to look like? And how does that, you know, the perception around here is, you know, well, it's just, you know, that's just the way he is. And it's like, well, do you want that to be your legacy? Is it, well, it's just old cranky pants? Do you want your legacy to be like, wow, did you see this person reinvent themselves and then go into another, you know, even a lateral role and then move up, or just have a larger scope of influence? I don't know.
Absolutely.
I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I feel like I might be doing that. So I'm sorry.
Not at all. No, I think that exactly is it. And I think, you know, I was at Nike when they moved through their restructure in 2009. And it was a pretty challenging time, right? Everybody was moving through the global recession. There was a lot going on for companies and for people personally. And there were a number of people that exited that were of a certain age. Mm. And I think, you know, could we go back to have those conversations more? And part of it was timing too, but to have more proactive conversations to understand where people were at and or if they could or were interested in doing something different. Could have made a big difference. Mm-hmm. And you see, and now I, you know, I'm not there obviously anymore, but I can certainly see and I hear about, because I know everybody, still know a lot of people there.
Yeah.
Although many of them have retired now, there's a gap, right? All of the people that had all of that experience, it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
So what do you do in a company of that size that's trying to maintain its culture of yesteryear, but also be relevant? Now you've got all of these young people that, by the way, aren't staying for their entire careers because people don't do that anymore.
Right.
How do you keep them engaged, right? How do you get them to stay? And again, where's that mentorship? Because that's off scale now, right? Who's doing all of the mentoring? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a miss for a number of companies that go that go down that path, right? Without understanding, no, there's a whole generation here that can still contribute. And it's not for everybody, but at least have some of those conversations to understand what it's like.
Yeah, I have heard that in some cases it was pretty brutal. That if you hit a certain age, it was it might just be that your department was restructured overnight and your position was no longer in it if you were of a certain age. And it sounded like there was a pretty brutal time, and so like almost sounds like a double whammy of some people deciding to leave and then the culture at the time being like, we're going to just clean house if you're not in the age group that is of our target consumer.
Yeah, it certainly, there was, I will say that there was a structure and a process to it to prevent that from happening. But in the end, certainly the perception was there and what people were seeing was exactly what you just said. So that's hard to negate. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a lot of, I'll say, proactive communication either. There initially was, and then there wasn't. Mm-hmm. And to your earlier point, when senior leadership goes quiet, it's almost worse, right? Because then they're making stuff up that is far worse than it actually is, but nobody's saying any different. And I think that's a challenge. And actually, for that reason, I'm very much an advocate of transparency. Like, hey, we may sometimes be overly transparent, but I'd rather do that than not share.
Yeah.
The alternative is worse, right? People
make up
all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, you're cool. I would love to work with you. I know, it's so nice. I mean, transparency is it's such a gift. I mean, that's, people want to know. I think we're grownups. We can be trusted with information and trusted with unease of, I think we can be trusted with a certain amount of uncertainty, knowing that, okay, this is what's going on and we're trying to work through this stuff. Rather than just the silence. And, you know, an interesting thing that you when you were talking a moment ago, and you said that that there was actually there's a structure in place at Nike to prevent this kind of walked out the door at 50 type of thing. But the perception, I've never even worked at Nike. And so, and it made it to me, right? And so like you said, okay, the perception, you know, certainly by some was that that's exactly how it was. And so it's just really interesting to hear from somebody who was there at the time that was like, you know, well, actually, you know, there was there maybe opportunity for some conversation? Yes. Was there some structure in place? Yes. Did some of these things happen? It's just like, yeah, it's a big place. So it does make sense that some of all A, B, and C probably. Oh my goodness. Well, Shirley, thank you so much for speaking with me today, for being open about just, you know, what it is like to be in a leadership position with younger employees and the cool things that you're doing that are really, and when I say cool, it's like, it's common sense leadership in a way of like, you know, I'm staying engaged. I'm staying open. I'm keeping my hand on my finger on the pulse, but that's, I mean, it's really cool because not everybody does it that way.
I know. And a lot of it, I say, these are just fundamentals, right? In a lot of ways, these are just fundamentals, but we sometimes forget about them.
Yeah. Well, good job of not forgetting them. I mean, this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh my God. No, it comes through loud and clear. Just what a great individual. They have somebody really special in you. I mean, I hope that they enjoy you as much as you clearly enjoy them, and like, and that really, you really care. It's very, very clear to me that you really care. And, you know, when I was making the comment and the reference to the friend who owned his own company, and it was, I mean, I could see it in your face. Really, I mean, like, it's like, oh, wait. Cameron, no, that part is exactly the same. The feeling of for my employees is exactly the same. And I totally appreciate that. And I bet they do too.
I hope so. And what I was just going to say too is I also worry about the owner, right? Like it's not just me and throughout the rest of the organization. I worry about the owner too and what he's got invested in me and the company and all of us. Mm-hmm. Right. So that kind of goes the whole gamut as well. And he's wonderful, by the way. So that makes a big difference, right? To have that feeling of we've got each other's back, and that permeates throughout the organization. So, and I certainly hope that they feel the same way. And honestly, I'm going to go back to something. I think it'd be wonderful to work with you. I think because we have a lot of the similar experiences and values. I think that's really important when you're working with people.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
So thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today.
Oh my gosh, my pleasure. It is an honor to have you on and just really inspiring. I hope that people take away what I'm taking away from you in terms of just being a really inspirational leader, someone who is totally walking the talk and really trying hard every day, like you said, to show up as your best self, you know, in service. I mean, it really says a lot. So thank you so much. And if any of you are listening and are interested in talking with Shirley, she's super great and she's very approachable. And you can find her on LinkedIn. I'll put her LinkedIn, what do I want to say, link in the notes. In the show notes and reach out to her. She has some really great ideas around leadership, which you've just heard here. And if you have a story that you'd like to tell on the show or that you'd like to share around what it's like to be in your 50s and a woman in today's society, please feel free to reach out to me. All of my information's also in the show notes. I can be found on LinkedIn or on my website. Thank you so much for listening.
Would you like to share your 50 Not Dead story? Help me move the discussion forward. Email me at cameron@cameronhuban.com or feel free to subscribe to my newsletter. Head on over to cameronhuban.com, put your email in the pop-up, and you're done. And hey, if you want to know what I'm doing on the day-to-day, just follow me on LinkedIn, Instagram, or Facebook.